Okay, good morning, everyone. I believe we have a few words left on the bottom of Kafvav Amud Bet. Tanu Rabbanan. Again, I'm just jumping in here, 26 pages late. So you'll have to help me out for some of the context of what happened before. But Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis, taught, right, we learned earlier in a braisa, Haholach mimakom lemakom, someone who's traveling from place to place, right? And in this case, the key is that they're not traveling for fun, but rather they're traveling for business. Right? And what happens? Along the way, unfortunately, someone passes away. Right? They lose a relative, one of the Shiva Krovim, one of the people who you have to sit Shiva for. Im yachol lema'et ba'isko. Right? If he's in yachol lema'et, if he can limit, right? If he can restrict some of his esek, some of his business activity, yema'et, then he's supposed to restrict it. Right? Because you've learned earlier, that someone who's sitting Shiva, it's not appropriate for them to engage in work, right? Not to go to work. Ve'im lav, but if not, then yigalgel imahen. Then he may continue to do his business as long as he's not doing it alone, if it's in conjunction with his whole business trip. If he's on, like, you know, he's with a convoy of people and his business partners and they went to a business trip, then he can work with them. They're showing him debate a little bit over here exactly what's going on. It's right. Is this for a parent? Is this for other Shiva Krovim? It seems to be a little bit up for debate, but the simple reading of the words, whether they shim, whether they work well with what we've learned earlier, the simple reading of the words is that if he needs to, he can continue on. Perhaps he's on the business trip, and it's more necessary for him to do business in order to pay for his needs, for his food, for his lodging, as opposed to if he was just at home, and probably he has backup / community to support him. Okay, new Braisa. Right, the Gemara goes back, and we'll spend many, many lines now on this whole idea of what we'll see. Tanu Rabbanan me'emasai kofin es hamitos. Right, have we discussed this before?
Mm-hmm.
Right, this is a major part of the Avelus process, which is quite unfamiliar to us, which has basically been abolished in modern times. But the Talmud, in many places, and here, spends many words on this. Right, when do the Avelim have to overturn their beds? Right, when do they flip over their beds? Which we know is one of the things you do when you're in mourning. Mi sheyetze mi pesach beso. That's the Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So the first opinion is from the time when the deceased, assuming the deceased passed away at home, when the deceased leaves the house on right to go be buried, right as the coffin goes out the front door, that's when it's appropriate to go ahead and overturn the beds. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, mi sheyisatem hagolel. Right, from when the lid of the casket is sealed, meaning when he's buried in the ground, right? So that's basically a machlokas, probably not only about flipping the beds, but basically in general, when you go from being an onen to being an avel, right? We're familiar with the second custom, we'll see how we paskin in a bit, but we normally assume that the avelus ends basically once the person's been buried. Until then, you're an onen, you're busy taking care of the mace, because they have to go ahead and be buried. But here we do have a machlokas. First opinion, Rabbi Eliezer when he leaves the house. Second opinion, Rabbi Yeshua when he's buried. Ma'asa shemet Rabbi Gamliel hazaken. Right, so he gives us a proof, a story, a ma'isa to prove what happened. Right, Rabbi Gamliel hazaken died. Kevin sheyatza mipesach beso. Right, when his body was leaving the front door of his house. Amar lehem Rabbi Eliezer kafu mitoseichem. Rabbi Eliezer said to the mourners, you should flip over your beds. So that's a proof. For obviously Rabbi Eliezer, right? His story supports his own opinion that it happens when you leave the house, the earlier opinion, and not just when the body is buried. The kevan shenistam rehagolel, when the lid of the casket was sealed, amar lahem Rabbi Yeshua kafu mitoseichem, right? Kafinu al pi hazaken. Sorry, kvar kafinu al pi hazaken. Right, but then they said, "Amru lo kvar kafinu kviyazach," and they said to him, "We already followed the first opinion." Right? It was a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. They were both standing around when Rabbi Gamliel Hazaken died. So obviously, the first one, Rabbi Eliezer, said to do it at the first time, and then the second one, Rabbi Yeshua, said to do it the second time. They're like, "Well, we already did it. You're too late." So Rabbi Eliezer brings that as a mice as a proof that he is correct. Okay. Continuing discussing the same topic. Tanu Rabbanan, Me'emasai Zokfin es Hamitos be'erev Shabbos. Right, when should the mourners, right, your bed has been upside down all week or from whenever the person died, right, during Shiva, And now you're going to go ahead and flip it right side up for Shabbos, right? Why? This is about beds, but it's also about the whole general idea of when, how soon before Shabbos, right? Many have had this practical question. We know you have to start getting ready for Shabbos. Even though the Avelus continues over Shabbos, the Avelus Bifarhesia, the public Avelus, does not. Right? And therefore, you have to get ready for Shabbos to a certain extent. You can change your clothes, you can put on shoes, you can sit on regular chairs, v'chula. So when does that start? How close to Shabbos? If they only do it during the 18 minutes, can you do it from already when you wake up in the morning? So the first opinion here is minha mincha v'lamala, right, from mincha time. Now obviously the word mincha time is a confusing topic. For those who are familiar with halachic zmanim, know there's two mincha times. There's mincha gedola and mincha katana. Right? Mincha gedola is half an hour after chatzot, halachic midday, and mincha katana is much later in the day. So that is enough, Gamina. That's the difference between how you read those. The Gemara comments, Amar Rabba Bar Huna, Afal Pichen, Eino Yoshev Aleha, Ad Shetechshach. Even despite the fact of when you say you're allowed to flip the bed right up, right, you're allowed to prepare for Shabbos, nonetheless, it's still actually usher, forbidden to sit on this bed or to sleep on this bed until it's actually Shabbos. Meaning, even though you can prepare for Shabbos on Friday, the actual nihuge avelus, the actual fact that you're not allowed to act like a non-mourner, doesn't start until Shabbos itself, until you light the candles. He's saying, interesting, the words here, achitechach, until it gets dark outside. So did you have to read that literally about Beinish Meshos? What happens if you bring in early Shabbos? Okay, for another time. Lamotze Shabbos, and what about after Shabbos? When do you have to flip the bed back upside down? Right, when do we go back to public mourning? Afopish en lo leishev alea yom echad. Choser v'kofe. He says, even if you only have one more day to sit, right, let's say you're a Shiva, let's say the person was buried on Monday, so the Shiva is going to be over on Sunday, and you're only going to sit, you only have to, even for one day, you still can't, you can't just be like, eh, it's only one day of Shiva. No, public mourning begins again, flip the bed back over. Right, and nonetheless, he has to flip the, overturn the bed. Now, Gemara cites another Braisa. Tana Rabbanan, Hakofe mitaso, Lo mitaso bilvad hu kofe, ela kol mitos shiesh lo betoch beso hu kofe. So it's not only the mourner's bed himself, but he's also flipping over all the beds in the house. Flipping over his children's bed, his wife's bed, right? All the potential beds, right? Why? And this gets into the fundamental reason about why we flip beds in the first place. I thought at first when learning this halacha that you do it because you're supposed to be uncomfortable, right? You wear the same clothes, you sit on a lower chair. But we'll see here, based on how they interpret this halacha, it's really much less about personal comforts than it is about what it says about the house. V'afilu yeshu asur mitos basar makomos. Even if you have 10 beds in 10 different places, right? Kofek es kula, and you have to turn them all around. V'afilu chamisha achin umeis echad. What happens if there's 5 brothers and God forbid one of them dies, right? Now there are 4 sitting shiva. Kulan kofin. All of them overturn their respective beds, even in their respective homes. Right? They're sleeping in different places, so it's not dependent on. The Gemara here is always assuming that the mace died at home. Right? So let's say one brother died in his home, the other 4 brothers are sitting shiva in brother two's house, but every night they go sleep in their own homes. They're flipping their bed even in their own homes. Right? Or the flipping in their own homes, not just in the house where the mace died.
Is that like primary residence for tax purposes? Or?
So we'll see here. It says in a second about what happens if you have other homes. What happens if you have vacation homes? Right? What about that? How intense does this get? But if you had a bed, I guess in this place probably a couch or maybe some sort of like a, not really a table, because a table is not part of this halacha, but let's say, you know, you have that couch that you always throw all the garbage on, and you never have room for sitting on it. Then that kind of place does not need to be overturned. Now we're getting to this whole conversation of a dargash. Right? Much of the rest of the daf is about this dargash. What is a dargash? But the Braisa says, dargash in tzarech lichfosa. One does not have to overturn their dargash. Ela zokfa. Rather, instead of doing a 180 and flipping it on its side, you can do a 90-degree turn and kind of put it on its, you know, imagine you have this table, so if it was flipped over, the wood part would be on the ground. But instead of that, you can put the legs, you know, up like this on the tall side. That dargash is okay to just turn it 90 degrees. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, dargash mati es karbitav, behu nofel me'alav. And what about in this case of the dargash? Rather, you can untie its loops and it falls by itself.
It's a Murphy bed?
No.
I mean, it kind of sounds like almost...
Maybe it's a
like a cot.
Well,
or
all
a
these beds are hammock-like. If you have the art scroll, you'll see on
a different page
it shows pictures of the bed. It's helpful, but all these beds, remember, they didn't have the same kind of springs and stuff that we have in bedboards. Rather, what they have is the bed is made of a canvas thing or a wire lathe, basically, which then cushions on top of that. And so this one is basically assuming here that when you if you untie the loops from the frame, then the inside kind of shrivels up. So not Murphy bed like, but I guess
it's accordion like.
Yeah,
it sounds like a
like it would just whoosh, kind of like a hammock that it would fall in the middle. Now the Gemara asks the question we're all asking: my dargash, what exactly is this thing? So the first opinion, we're going to have three opinions as to what a dargash was. The first, we have an opinion. It's rejected. We try to go back to it. It's rejected. We try to go back to it. And finally, it's rejected for good. So this is the first suggestion, which will be rejected. Amar Ula, Arsa Tidgada. Right? It's a bed of good fortune. What does that mean? So the Mefarshim here explain that a bed of good fortune means different interpretations, but either it's the type of bed that was left, right? It almost sounds like a little bit of Avodah Zarah, like a little bit Nichush, a little bit magical-like. You would leave this bed aside to say, like, look, I'm very wealthy, I have another bed that no one has to sleep in, so Hashem should continue to give us this bracha. So you could say that that's a little magic-like, that the Mefarshim don't like so much. So rather, some of the Mefarshim say it's a bed for the guardian angel of the house. And that's, I guess, more Kabbalistic-like than
but that's okay.
That seems to be okay. Yes. We'll see. At the end of the day, this whole interpretation gets rejected. But for now, it seems to be okay.
It's okay for the angel, it's not okay.
So Amar Ula, again, Arsa Degada, it's a bed of good fortune. The Gemara is going to challenge this explanation, as I said. Amar Le Rabba, Rabba said to Ula, Ela Ma'ata Gabe Melech Titznan, Kol Ha'am Mesubim Al Ha'aretz, Hu Mesev Al Ha'dargash. Right, so what is that? If that's so, when it comes to a king, right, the Mishnah taught us, that when a king is sitting shiva, kol am mesubim al aretz, all his nation, all his people, they sit on the ground and they serve him, right? They serve him his meal. They know that the mourner is supposed to be served the meal, especially the first meal, right? So the people sit on the ground and the king, who makes of all dargash, and the king sits on this dargash, right? Whatever a dargash is, that's what the king sits on. So the question was, right? Ma ika mide ta'ad ha'idna lo osvine v'hashta mosvinan le? You're going to tell me that it's a bed of good fortune. How can you call it a bed of good fortune when until today the king didn't sit on it? But now he has such good fortunes. He's an avil. He sits on the bed. Doesn't really seem like what you should call a bed of good fortune if he only sits on it during his shiva. Right? His fortunes are not exactly so hot right now. So... therefore, the Gemara, that was the Kasha, and now the Gemara rejects that Kasha. What does the Gemara say? Maski play Ravashi. Ravashi challenges this thing of Ravula. My Kusha, why is that? What's the problem with here? Mide the Hava Achila Vishasia Taad Haidna Lo Ochline Velo Ishkine Hashta Ochline Veishkine. He says, just like before, right, a mourner. You were not in charge. You didn't give him of your food. You didn't give him of your drink. Right? And now he's an avil. All of a sudden, he gets free food. He gets free drinks. Sounds gavaldic. Right? So it's things change. He's basically saying, like, just because it sounds good, right? This dargash sounds good. I get to sit on it while everyone else sits on the floor. Every avil, all of a sudden, is served free food and free drink after they come back from the cemetery. So, but that's not so wonderful. It's just the halacha. Don't assign good or bad value to that. It's just life, and therefore it's not a fair kasha. And therefore, we have the first kasha rejected with a terutz. Now that we've rejected Rabba's objection, right? We try to challenge Ula again, challenging the fact that a dargash does not mean a bed of good fortune. Ela'i kasha hai kasha. Rather, if you want to say that there's a kasha, there's a problem with Ula's explanation, this is the kasha. Titania, Right, we learned elsewhere in a brisa. Darga she'enu tzarech lichfosa, ela zokfa. Right, we said earlier that the darga does not need to be flipped 180. Rather, it can be put 90 degrees. It can be put up on its side. The e'ar se'degada, right, if you say that this is really this bed of good fortune, amai enu tzarech lichfosa. Why don't you have to overturn it? Right, his good fortune has been overturned. So, right, someone in his family died. Why don't you have to completely overturn the bed of good fortune? Tanya, hakofa mitaso, lo mitaso bilvad hu kofa, elako mitos yesh lo besoch beso kofa. Right, as we said, why is this darga not part of the halacha, that not only is his bed turned over, but all beds in his household are turned over. The darga is in his household, it should be turned over as well. And so, they say, my kasha, why is this such a difficulty? So that's the kasha is, basically, right, how can you tell me it's a bed of good fortune, right? It seems like it should be overturned also. So they answer this kasha by saying, Mide dehava amita min yuchedes l'chelim, right, just like you had a bed that was, if you have a bed that was used only for utensils, then that was not turned over. The Tanya, as we saw, im haisa mita miyuchedes l'chelim, ena tzarech l'chvosa, right, we saw that earlier. So too, he's saying here, we see from this ruling that all beds, and we saw all beds in the home have to be turned over, but not including beds that have another purpose. So maybe here, this darga, since it was designated for another purpose, it shouldn't have to be turned over. In this case, the purpose is not to hold your utensils. In this case, the purpose is for good fortune, right? For the angel or whatever we said. And therefore, he says, no, it could still be that, because the fact that it's not overturned, don't tell me that makes it a problem, because it has a different purpose, and anything that has any purpose, whether it's utensils or good fortune, should be exempt from that halacha. So that was the second challenge, and that was the second terutz. Finally, the third challenge. El ikasha haikasha. If you want to say there's a difficulty, then this is it. Rabban Shima ben Gamliel Omer, Dargash Matir Karbi Tav, Behu Nofel Me'elav. Right, in the case of the Dargash, we said, as I explained earlier, and if you have an article, you can see at the bottom of the page, the pictures, right? Where how do you undo it? You untie the loops, and it kind of collapses itself like a hammock, right? It kind of falls into a ball, probably in the center. And if you want to tell me that this bed is a bed of good fortune, my karbitav islay, right? What loops should it have, right? Since it's constructed as an ordinary bed, it does not have such loops. I'm not really sure why that's... Let me think for a second here. I guess he's saying that if it should be structured as a regular bed if it's going to have... Right, you see, a regular bed there those days had again a weave, like one weave going the long way, one weave going the short way, and therefore you had these squares which you could rest pillows above it. So he's saying that it's not like an ordinary bed, and therefore he's having a problem saying it's a bed of good fortune if it doesn't look like a regular bed, I guess. And that seems to be the kasha that sticks. It can't be a bed of good fortune if it's physically designed differently. I don't know why that's such a kasha.
Yeah.
What?
Since it doesn't have loops?
Yeah.
I think it's a search for distinction.
Continues. Roshim go memer. Dargash matir karbi tav, who no film elav. Fine. Isakadait arsa de God. If you say it's a bed of good fortune. I guess what he's saying is that if you're going to tell... okay, here's the thing. You're going to tell me it's distinct because it's a bed of good fortune. Right? What made the darga different? It's a bed of good fortune as opposed to a bed for sleeping on. But then, and that's why it's not flipped. I can tell you no. It's not flipped because it's a bed of good fortune. It's not flipped because it's a different type of bed. It's not made with the same kind of weave. It's made that it collapses in the middle. And therefore, flipping it on its back, I guess, wouldn't do
Doesn't
anything.
Happen.
If you think about it, actually, yeah. Right? Think about if you flip the bed over.
Yeah.
It might, even though the legs obviously wouldn't really work this way. I guess it might work the same way.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. But they're saying, don't tell me the only distinction between Darga is that it's a bed of good fortune, but otherwise it's all the same. It's not the same, actually. Physically, it's a different creation. And maybe Darga actually means physically different in terms of it's not a weave, it's a loops. Right? That could, it could be a physical distinction as opposed to a purposeful, right? Or a distinction like that. And therefore, that actually is a good enough interpretation to refute Ula's understanding of a darga. So now that we need to, of a dargash. Now that we need to redefine dargash, the Gemara goes ahead and gives a terutz of how to redefine it. Ki asa ravin, right? When ravin, whenever you see the word asa, it means it came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Right? Ki asa ravin amar le ha'u merabanan v'rav tachlifa bar ma'arava shmei. Right? When Ravin came from Israel to Bavel, he said that a certain rabbi whose name was Rav Tachalifa, and he was Ma'arava, he was a Westerner, right? He said to him, "Tahava shchiach b'shuka degildae," right? That this Rav Tachalifa used to frequent the leather maker's market and my dargash, and he said there, "I know this trade craft. I know how they make leather." And I'll tell you, what's a dargash? It's an arsa ditzla. It's a bed made of leather. And therefore, and why don't you have to overturn it? And you don't have to overturn a bed made of leather because it'll touch the ground and it'll get damp. And therefore, the bed will get ruined. And so, they tell you that that's the reason you don't have to overturn it. It's completely practical. And this idea of angels and good fortune is gone. So you can sit a little more comfortably now.
I need a dargash now.
Bed of leather?
Sounds very fashionable. Natutzi is coming out with one, I hear.
Okay. Fine. So what are we saying? Itmar nami amara, right? We said another place we proved the same thing from Amara Biyermia. Dargash Sirugo Mitocho. Right? A dargash Sirugo. Sirugo is a bind, is a weave. That is Mitocho, meaning that it has these loops that are built into the frame as opposed to a weave, which was not in the frame. It went over and around the frame, like kind of a, like looped around it as opposed to making holes within it, but a dargash had holes within it. Mita serugea algaba, right? An ordinary bed has its bindings over it that you, like if you have the frame, you would loop all the way around the frame and go to the other side and loop around the frame. And this one has like a hole punctured through the sides.
Like a camp cot. The cot's just...
All of them are like some type of a camp cot. Yeah. I mean, to tell you the truth. It's a frame with...
Yeah, nowadays...
With netting, more or less,
right.
Attached
but
to
I guess the difference is does the mesh go around the frame? Or is there a hole drilled through the frame? Okay. So now we've decided what that is. And we... fine. Now we go back all the way... If you remember all the way back there, we had a machlokes between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and now we're going to solve that. Am Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha, Am Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, or the Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. That what? That in the case of a dargash, you could untie its loops, so you have to untie its loops so that the sleeping surface falls to the ground, and that is what you must do. Good. Now we are done with the dargash, and we can move on to our next topic. Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rabbi Asi, Mita shenaklitei yotzin, a bed who has whose double posts, it has double posts, a canopy bed, right? Zukva v'dayo, that you can stand upright. Imagine you have a bed. If you have the article, you can see a picture of it. Imagine you had a bed. It's like a canopy bed, so you have a regular bed, four little posts on the ground, and then where the person sleeps is two very tall posts, and you almost have, like, I guess with a cross beam, and then you have a tent that almost comes down. The basic thing, if you have that kind of bed, you don't have to flip it 180 degrees, because then it would, like, be toddling on two tall sticks and would just fall on someone. In that case, you're allowed to turn it 90 degrees and put it up on its side. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, another braisa. Yashan algabe kise, algabe udyane, algabe karka. Let's say a person has more interesting sleeping habits. Normally they sleep on a chair, or they sleep on a mortar, or they sleep on the ground. right? Lo yatze dechovaso. Therefore, he has not fulfilled his obligation of sleeping on the mita, on the bed that's been flipped, even if he's less comfortable, right? So it's not really about comfort, as we said earlier. Even though he's less comfortable sleeping in a chair, or he sleeps on the ground. Well, if you're going to sleep on the ground, what are you going to flip? There's nothing to flip. So he says he has not fulfilled his obligation. Rabbi Yochanan, shilkayim kfiya samita. He's not fulfilled his obligation of actually overturning the bed. It seems to be its own obligation, not necessarily connected to comfort. Let's see if the Gemara explains, otherwise we'll explain after. Tanu Rabbanan, machbedin umarbitzin bebeis avel. Right, we're allowed to sweep, and we're allowed to sprinkle water on the ground in a beis avel, in a shiva house. Meaning you can take care of like appropriate, you know, household cleaning in this beis avel. Umadichin karos, you're allowed to wash dishes. The kochos, the slachios, the ketonios, the beis avel, and you can wash dishes and jars and cups and cutlery in a shiva house. Ve'en mavin es hamugmar v'esa besamim leis avel, but you're not allowed to bring spices or incense or nice smelling things or perfumes into that same shiva house.
Is it that the mourner's allowed to do these things, or other people are allowed to do these things in the house?
I think he's saying the mourner even. That even the mourner can do these kind of things. But doesn't clarify. It does say the beis avel, not the avel himself.
If the mourner's not even allowed to go to work,
right? But let's say,
straighten up their house.
Well, some of this is saying, like, going to work, I would think going to, I don't see why that's a proof. You know, if you have dirty dishes in the sink, that's much less of an activity than going to the office for the day. Or, you know, in this case, you know, sprinkling water on the floor is because you have a dirt floor.
Right.
And it's going to get all dusty and disgusting.
Right.
Right. So sprinkling water on it is kind of like, you know, keeping it at bay.
I think a lot of this stuff falls along the lines of certain practicalities, and there becomes a hierarchy. In other words, optimally, a mourner does not prepare his food. He does not serve himself food. Therefore, he also would not be cleaning up. But if there's no one there available to do it, you don't let it sit.
Right, but that's most specifically true for that first meal. The first meal, the mourner is really not supposed to prepare himself, and the community is supposed to take care of him. But the halacha is very clear that if, unfortunately, the community neglects their responsibility, the guy doesn't have to starve. He's allowed to eat.
Right.
Absolutely. But the other meals, he really could take care of himself. Yeah. That's no halacha that he can't cook for himself, right? The other meals. It's just that we do a nice thing and we take care of them, we bring shiva meals. But the real, real important meal is that first meal, the suda mafsekas. And here it sounds like, you know, it's nothing intense. It's just sweeping and, you know, keeping your house to a livable standard. Is this indeed so? Okay, so you asked your question. Really, you're allowed to do this? V'hatani bar kapara. Right, bar kapara said, ein mevarachin lo ala mugmar. Right, I thought you're not allowed to recite the bracha borei minei v'samim in a shiva house, right? Bruchehu delo mevarchin, right? Is it only that one does not recite a bracha on these spices, or ha atuye mitanin, right? He's saying, I know the halachas, I'm not allowed to say bracha borei minei v'samim on these spices, but does that mean I can smell them? I just don't say the bracha, or does that mean I shouldn't bring them in? I shouldn't smell them at all? The Gemara says, look, Kasha, it's not a difficulty, right? Because ha bebeis avel v'ha bebeis haminachamin, right? This refers, so here it actually does make a difference, Levi, kind of what you're saying, that here, he's talking about the beis avel, that's for the mourner himself, and obviously it's the same physical dwelling. Maybe it's different rooms, or it's different, who's the subject of the discussion. But when it comes to the mourner himself, right, if it's just for pleasure, he's not allowed to smell things. But when it comes to the house itself, especially those who are coming to visit, right, they're allowed to smell things, right? Especially if there have been unpleasant odors, they're allowed to be blocked out. I realize the Gemara itself does not, going back a step before we go to the Mishnah, the Gemara itself does not specify why we flip the bed. And a lot of the Mefarshim explain that we're flipping the bed not necessarily for comfort, but to show that your life has been flipped upside down, that someone has died, and that changes things. And therefore, that's why you're not only flipping your bed, you're flipping other beds, and making a statement that things are different, and Hashem has, you know, turned your world upside down by taking this person from us.
Isn't when we sit on the floor in Tisha B'Av, isn't this also because of Avelis?
It's
symbolic of it. Yeah.
But that's because of discomfort, not because of.
Well, Tisha B'Av is a super complicated day, and you can read of J.J. Schachter's book on it. Tisha B'Av is mixing the practice of Avelus and the practice of Atzom, right? The mourning practices and the fasting practices, and the problem is often the same ritual is for both, but with completely different meanings, right? Right. For example, we fast on Yom Kippur, that's nothing to do with the fast of Tisha B'Av, right? And the mourning practices are about sadness, and the fasting practices are about request and self-reflection and trying to change the future. Often those there's the same practice can mean different things in different contexts, and Tisha B'Av has a little bit of both, and that makes it, you know, quite a confusing day hashkafically. All right, Mishnah. I'm sorry, this is a long amud. And molichin lebeis avel, right? One does not deliver food to the mourner's house. How does he, not that you don't deliver it, but how should you not deliver it? Lo betavla, not on a tray. Vlo beis kutla, not in a large bowl. Vlo bekanon, not in a basket. Lo besalim, or I guess a fancy basket, a big basket, and not in a regular basket. Ella besalim, thank you. A plain basket, right? A simple way. It shouldn't come wrapped up in, you know, fancy wrapping paper and the like. And omrim birchas avelim b'moed. Now we're actually talking about chol moed for a second. This is after all moed katan. So he says you should not say the birchas avelim. We are unfamiliar with this bracha, but it used to be the custom that at some point during the avelus there was a bracha that you said. Unclear exactly if it was the avel who said it, or was the visitors who said it. It almost sounds like from later on that it's the visitors who said it.
When they walked in or something.
It sounds like, well, we'll see in a bit exactly when they would have said it, but it seems like you could maybe say it even at different stages, depending, it's almost like Sheva Brachas. If you missed the funeral, you could say it when you visited. But they say that bracha, which we no longer have the custom to say at all, was not said on Chol HaMoed. Ve'en omdim b'shuro u'menachamin. Right? You don't stand in the shuros. Right, obviously, after we put the person in the ground, we form those two lines, and we comfort the person as they walk out of the cemetery. Those rows do not happen on Chol HaMoed. Aval Omdim B'Shuro Menachamin. Right, we do the rows. Thank you. I keep missing the words here. We do those shuros on Chol HaMoed. Upotrin Esarabim. Right, and we promptly, but then we promptly dismiss the rabbim, the public. We ask them to go home. V'Eim Anichin Esamita Berachov. We do not set down the casket, right, the bier, in the street on Chol HaMoed. Why? Shelo lahargil es hesped. Because we don't want to encourage hespedim. We don't say eulogies on Chol HaMoed. And therefore, if you put the casket down in the streets, people will think you're gathering for eulogies. They didn't have funeral homes. They did the eulogies in the streets. The law shall nashim la'olam, and the casket or a woman's body should never be put down in the streets. Mipnei hakavod, right, for the sake of the kavod of her. And the mefarshim explain because if she died in during childbirth, there could be blood that could come out, and that would be inappropriate. And so therefore, they just said that women should never be placed in the streets for eulogies. The Gemara now we get to a brisa. Tana Rabbanan. This goes pretty quickly, and we'll see over and over again. A lot of these Gemaras are about sensitivity. Tanu Rabbanan, Berishona Hayu Malichin BeBeis Avel. Right, originally they would deliver food to a shiva house. Ashirim BeKlasos Shel Kasef Shel Zav. Rich people would bring it in fancy baskets, gold and silver. Vanim B'Selei Nitzarim. Shall arava klufa, right? And the poor people would bring it in simple baskets. V'hayuanim mispayshim, and therefore the poor people would feel ashamed. They'd feel embarrassed. V'hiskinu shelo hayam avim v'selei notzrim shall arava klufa mipnei kvodan shelanim. So they made a takana. They made a decree that everyone had to bring it in the most simple type of basket, right? So that no one would feel embarrassed. You don't want the poor people to feel embarrassed, and then maybe not decide to engage in this mitzvah. Tanu rabbanan v'rishonayu mashkim v'beis avel. Right, originally they would serve when they served water, when they served drinks in a morning house. Ashirim bezchuchis levana. Right, the rich people served in fancy glasses. Right, literally glass, white glass. Va'anim bezchuchis sevua, and the poor people served it in colored glasses. Obviously, that was cheaper to make back then. V'hayu anim ispayshim. Again, the poor people felt ashamed. V'hiskinu shuakom mashkim bezchuchis sevua mipnei kvodan shel anim. Again, same decree that the food should be served in the simplest type of dish so that everyone felt comfortable and no one felt embarrassed. Went to the lowest common denominator. Interesting that at the beginning, right, before, originally, they would actually reveal the faces of wealthy people at the kvura. You'd be able to see their face. But you would cover the faces of the poor people. Right? Because the poor people, their face would have been turned ugly or blackened by famine and poverty, right, and dirt. And so you didn't want to show that. It wasn't respectful. So the original intention was good. It was to respect the mace and not show people how poor and disheveled this person was. But then the poor people felt ashamed because they know you weren't showing the face because you knew underneath it was poor and disgusting and right and dirty. Therefore, they decided we're just going to cover everyone's face so everyone's equal. Again, in order to honor the poor people. Same thing again. Back to our dargash. Right? Originally, they would take out the rich corpses on this fancy leather bed, on this dargash. Right, and the poor people. Now we're on Kavzain Amubet. Bechlicha, right, on a bier, on a simple. I don't know exactly what a bier is, but a simple coffin type, transportation device. And again, the poor people were felt ashamed because they were brought out on this simple device and not on this fancy leather bed. Therefore, they said everyone should be taken out on the most simple type of coffin, of type of bier. Again, in order to respect the poor people. Right, originally, they would place incense, good smells, under those who had died from intestinal issues, from stomach issues, because they didn't want it to smell. Interesting, in this case, it's different than who was embarrassed. Those who were living with this same disease, they felt ashamed, right? Because they know that, when we die, everyone's going to know that we had this issue. So therefore, they decided they would place good-smelling incense under all corpses. So that those living with this disease did not feel ashamed. Right, originally they would take the utensils if someone had died while she if a woman had died while she was a nida, and therefore back in the days when we were more sensitive to tuma vitara, anything that you touched while in the state of nida would become tameh, and you'd have to take it to the mikvah. So if you died in a state of nida, then anything you touched while you were alive had to be taken to mikvah. And those who were living, who were nida, were menstruating, felt uncomfortable, felt ashamed. So therefore, they changed the custom. They would take the kalim, the utensils of a woman who passed away. Every woman, no matter her age, no matter whether she was nida or tahora, they would take her utensils to the mikvah. In order for concern, in order to be sensitive to those who nidot, who were alive. Right, originally, if you were a zav, a male who's having certain types of missions, which makes him tamei, a certain sickness, right? Then that person, if he died, all his utensils had to be taken to the mikvah. The hayu zavin chayam ispaishim, and therefore, but those who were alive felt embarrassed. He's kinu shayam atbilin al gav hakol. Right? Mipnei kvodan shel zavin. Therefore, the rabbis instituted that they would take the utensils of all men who died as well to the mikvah in order that the zavim who were alive did not feel embarrassed. One more time. Right? Originally, and unfortunately this is still very true, especially down here in South Florida, having a funeral is a fortune. Right? It's extremely expensive to bury someone. And so the poor people felt ashamed that they weren't going to be able to do it properly. So what would they do? It's very, very sad. They would just abandon the corpse in the public domain, and therefore it became a mace mitzvah, and the whole community had to deal with it. Right? But how sad is that you have to abandon your corpse in order to go ahead and give it a proper burial? So what did they do? Right? What did they say? The way the Gemara phrases it is very telling. The dealing with the funeral costs was more difficult on the family than the fact that the person died. It was more stressful that they had to pay for the funeral than they had to deal with the death. Ad shayu krova manichin oso uvorchin. Right, to the point again that they would leave him and they would run away. Ad shabar Rabbi Gamliel v'nagu kalos rosh ba'atzmo. Until Rabbi Gamliel came and he treated himself with kalus rosh. What does that mean? He treated himself lightly. The yatza bechli pishtan. And to machlokas here, does that mean upon his death? He left instructions for himself to be buried in a very simple pishtan, a very simple flax or linen garment? Or did it mean that he instructed his talmidim to take care of another mace like that? V'nagu am achrav letzeis bechli pishtan. Right? They no longer bury people in these beautiful, fancy garments. Rather, they buried people in very simple linen garments. Amar Rav Papa, va'idna nahagu alma afilu betzarda bar zuza. Right, and now, the custom became even lower than that. We bury people in the most simple items that are made of coarse canvas. It's only worth a zuz, it's barely worth a dollar. And so everyone's buried the same, everyone's treated the same. No one should feel embarrassed. And manichin esamita berachov. Going back to our Mishnah, right? That was all kind of a tangent. We talked about this idea that there's no eulogies on Chol HaMoed. So the mita, the bier, the coffin, is not placed in the street during Chol HaMoed, so that eulogies will not be encouraged. Amar Rav Papa, en moed bifnei talmidei chachamim. Right? That on Chol HaMoed, right? Chol HaMoed does not stand in the way. Chol HaMoed is not a reason for eulogies to be held back when it comes to Talmud Chacham. He's allowed to have eulogies said even on Chol HaMoed. The Kol Shekhen Chanukah v'Purim, and so too on Chanukah and Purim, eulogies are allowed. V'hanei milei b'fanav, right? We know there's no Yisrael Malach on Chanukah and Purim. It's much less of an intense day than Chol HaMoed. V'hanei milei b'fanav, however, this is so only in the presence, only while you're in front of the mace, in front of the coffin. Aval shelo b'fanav lo. If you're not in front of the coffin, then you can't do it. The Gemara asks, really? Ani, is that really true? V'har Rav Kahana saftei l'Rav Zvid minaharda Befum Nahara, right? Rav Kahana eulogized his friend Rav Zvid, who was from the Harday, even though the body was in the Harday, but the eulogy happened in Fum Nahara, and that was on Chol HaMoed. How could that be? It wasn't in front of the casket. You just told me you have to be in front of the casket. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Papi Yom Shmua Hava. Although it was not in front of the casket itself, It was on the original day that he heard about, he was reported to, that this person died, that his friend died. Ukefanav dami. And we have a halachic concept that on the day you hear about a mace, then that day is like the body is right in front of you. That halacha is relevant, doesn't explain it here, but let's say, right, there's a whole halacha is called Shmua Rechoka. Let's say this doesn't happen very often these days. I did hear about a story quite recently. It's very, very rare nowadays. But let's say two people are estranged. Let's say you're estranged from your parents, God forbid. You're estranged from your siblings, God forbid. And all of a sudden you hear, oh yeah, that person died 6 months ago. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to sit shiva? And the halachas there are quite complicated. So perhaps this is relevant there. On the moment you hear about it, right? How do you treat it? Even though they're already, they've been buried for 5 months. Okay, moving on. Amar Ula, hesped al lev. Right? The term hesped, when the term hesped is used in the Torah, right? It refers, what does hesped mean? In the Torah, it doesn't necessarily mean eulogy. It refers to like going like this, right? Like we do during al chet, hitting your chest, right? Al lev, on your heart, going like this. How do we know? Dichtiv, a quote of pasuk here, pasuk from Yeshayahu, al shadayim sufdim, right? Upon the breasts, the shadayim, right? They will beat. They'll go like this. Tipuach beyad, right? Hitting with your hand, right? When the term tipuach is used in the Mishnah, it refers to bayad, clapping your hands, right? Kilus beregel, kilus. When that term is used in Tanakh, it means stomping your feet. It seems like their mourning practices were much more inclusive of the body than ours are. They were hitting chest, they were clapping hands, they were stomping feet, right? They were trying to express their feelings of, their internal roller coaster with their body, much more than we do. More in tune, perhaps, with their emotions. Mm-hmm. The Gemara discusses some of these terms now. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamekala.
Only the mourners, the immediate family.
Yeah, yeah. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamekales, Loikales. Basandal ela biminaal. Right? If you stamp your feet, you only should do that if you're wearing a sandal, but not if you're wearing a shoe. Mipnei sakana, because of the danger. They're worried that if you're not wearing sturdy shoes, you might stomp so hard you might break your foot. Okay, now we learn about various halachot of a mourner. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Avel Kevan Shani Anab Rosho, right? Shuv, this is very important actually. Shuv Eman Menachamin Rashain Leshev Etzlo. If a mourner nods his head, then those who are sitting visiting him at the Shiva house, they shouldn't comfort him anymore. They should leave. And what the Mefarshim explain here is that since a mourner can't say, you know, I'm okay, please leave, and it's not appropriate. He's not supposed to greet you, he's not supposed to tell you to leave. I guess, though, even theoretically he could. It seems like here they're saying that, you know, he's basically telling you that, like, I've been comforted. And so it's not so appropriate to hang around someone and try to keep comforting when he says, I'm already comforted. I think the message here for us is, you know, when you go to a Shiva house, you have to be very, very aware of the cues. You know, do they want you there? Do they not want you there? You know, do they want you talking? Do they not want you talking? And sometimes they just want you to come, and if you can be there, you know, you drive an hour, but they only want you there for 2 seconds, right? Just to know, okay, you came, or maybe it's a bad time. Sometimes the comfort is in not being there, or is in leaving at the appropriate time. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, akol chayavin la'amod bifnei nasi. Right, when it comes to a nasi, a prince, an important or a political figure, an important person, all are obligated to rise, to stand when he walks in the room. Chutz me'ave v'chola, an avel, a mourner, or a sick person are exempt from standing up when this nasi walks in the room. Am Rabbi Yochanan, l'kol omrim lehem shavu. All are told after the nasi walks in, everyone keeps on standing until they're specifically told, shavu, sit down. Chutz me'ave v'chola, except for this avel chola, they never stood up in the first place. Obviously, they're not told to sit down. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Avel Yom Rishon, Asul Ochel Lechem Mishalo. Right, we talked about this before. This first meal, the Suda Mafsekes, it's asur, it's forbidden for him to eat of his own bread, of his own food. Meda Amar LeRachmana LeYechezkel. Right, we learn a lot of our. I'm sure you've spoken about this before already. That we learn a lot of the Minagei Avelut from Yechezkel. When God was speaking to Yechezkel, in this case, not mourning over a person, but mourning over the city of Yerushalayim, was about to be destroyed. And basically Hashem told him, like, don't mourn, and don't do this, and don't do that. And so we learn the opposite. We should do all those same things. Right? That God told Yechezkel, Lechem anashim lo tochel. Other people's bread you should not eat. Right? And therefore we learn the mourners should specifically eat the bread of other people when they come home. Okay. Getting close to finishing off the Amud. The Gemara explains here how the Amoraim were makbid to do this, follow the Salacha. Rabba and Rav Yosef machlafesu dasaihu lahadadeh. Rabba and Rav Yosef were probably very poor, and they couldn't necessarily afford to go ahead and pay someone else and pay for someone else's food. So they switched meals. Right? This almost sounds like mishloach manos. If you can't afford to give mishloach manos, you could just give your meal to your friend, and your friend can give his meal to you. However, the Rishonim here explain that unlike mishloach manos, this can't be a deal. Right? Please God, you're not sitting shiva at the same time. It can't be like literal, even though it sounds tit for tat. It can't be premeditated tit for tat, because otherwise it's not really considered giving someone else the meal, just considered switching. But it could be I give you your meal when you're in Avil, and you'll come give me my meal. So we know that we pay each other back, but even though it's not explicitly said and it's not promised ahead of time. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Meis ba'ir, and when a person dies in a city, kol b'nei ha'ir osrin b'siyas malacha. All the residents of the town are forbidden to go to work until the funeral. We want them to take the funeral seriously, to attend and not be busy with their work, and therefore they're all have an Isra Malacha until the person's been buried. Rav, and we're going to qualify that, Rav Hamnuna Ikla Ledrumasa. Rav Hamnuna arrived in this place, a town called Darumasa, Shama Kol Shipura Deshichva. Right, he heard the sound of the shofar blowing because someone had passed away. Chaza hanach inshe deka avde avidata. Right, he saw that people were, and he saw people were working. How could they work? There's a funeral that has to happen. They should stop working. We just learned this in Malacha. Amr lahu. Right, that he said to them. Lehevu hanach inshe b'shamta. Right, he said, maybe those people, right, he said that you're going to be b'shamta. You're going to be in excommunicated. You're going to be in cherem. Right, lo shichva ika b'masa. Is there not a dead person in the town who needs to be buried? How are you not taking care of him? How are you not dealing with it? Amru lo, chavu rasa ikam mebemasa. He said there's a chavra kadisha. They're taking care of him. We've designated a smaller group who has this obligation, and therefore we're all off the hook. Amru lahu, ihachi sharia lahu. If so, then I release you from your excommunication, from your cherem. It's fine to go ahead and designate a small group to deal with this issue, this communal issue, as opposed to everyone feeling like they have to take care of it themselves. Okay, now we're going to continue with these statements of Avraham Yehuda Amar Rav for a while, even though some of them don't actually have to do with our topic. Avraham Yehuda Amar Rav, kol mitkasha almeso, yoser midai. Anyone who grieves over the passing of someone too much, almes acher hu balche. He'll ultimately weep for another deceased person. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't have enough time to research, to go in depth on the rest of this stuff. But Levi, we're interested in your thoughts after the shiur. These are quite psychologically, in my mind, challenging statements, especially in modern times. Again, I think that there's definitely merit to what the Gemara is saying. But you know how everyone goes through their mourning process. You know, I'm no expert at all. But it is interesting to see the Gemara's thoughts versus modern thoughts and figure out, how to make them work. But this first statement of the Gemara is that if you mourn too much over the death of someone, then someone else you love is going to die. Right? And it gives an example. Hai itasa dehavas b'shib vuse de Rav Huna. Right? There's a certain woman in Rav Huna's neighborhood. Havalei Shiva Banim, she was blessed with seven sons. Meis Chabinai, unfortunately one of her boys died. Hava Kabechi Biserusa Ale, and she wept excessively for him. She wept too much, says the Gemara. Shlach Rav Huna, lo ta'avdi hachi. Rav Huna sent her a message, don't do this, you're doing the wrong thing. Lo ishkachabe, but she paid no attention, she ignored his message. Shlach la itzaitat mutav v'ila tzavis Zavdita Laidach. He said, if you listen to me, Gavaldik, all will be well. But if you don't listen to me, you should probably start making provisions for your next son, Chas V'Shalom, to die. What happened? Mice. She didn't listen to him, and another son died. The Mesu Kulu. And if she kept on ignoring him, and eventually, very tragically, all seven of her sons died. Lasuf Amarlan, and he said to her, Timush Zavdita Lenafshech. If you don't stop crying, you're gonna die yourself. And that's exactly what happened, Umisa. And she passed away. And the Torah proves this from a Pasuk. Al Tivku Lames Val Tanodu Lo. Right, it says, the Pasuk says here in Yeremiyahu, Al Tivku Lames Velo Tanodu Lo, Bahu Vahu Laholech, Kilo Yashuv Od Vra Es Eretz Moladato. Right, the Pasuk here says that you should do not cry for those who've died, and do not shake your head for him. And what how do they explain this? Obviously allowed to cry. We know that there's crying when someone dies. Al tivku lames yoser midai. Obviously you can cry, but don't cry too much. Don't cry excessively. Val tanodu lo yoser mikashir. And don't shake your head like, oh, I can't believe this happened to me. No, beyond a reasonable measure. Ha ketzad, and what is that measure? It's prescribed. Shlosha yamim abechi. The first 3 days are known as the days of bechi, the days of crying. And Shiva, v'shiva lehesped, and all 7 days are days of eulogies and lamenting and remembering them. U'shloshim legeutz letisporos, and for 30 days we refrain from doing laundry, we refrain from cutting our hair. Right, we're in the shloshim. U'makam v'halach, amar kadosh baruch hu, iatem rachamim. Right, from this point onwards, after the shloshim, amar kadosh baruch hu, iatem rachamanim bo yoser mimeni. That's a sarcastic statement. God says, are you more compassionate on the deceased than I am? Like this whole thing, what's behind all these statements, as challenging as they are, is a theological discussion, right? If we believe that there's hashgacha pratis, if we believe God has a hand in this world, then when a person dies, that's what God wanted. For whatever reason, as difficult as it is to understand, God has determined that this person should pass. And we're humans, we're allowed to react, we love this person, we have 3 days of bechi, we have the whole shiva, we have the shloshim period, if it's a parent, we have the year. But in the end of the day, we have to say, right? We say the bracha, right? That we believe that Baruch Dayan Emes, that we believe that God is a true judge, we believe that this happened for a reason, and God's basically saying, are you more compassionate than me? right? Like, I chose to take this person from the world for whatever reason, and you should accept my judgment and not, you know, not be so torn up about it. You know, it's interesting to think, though, how that works with modern theories of mourning and avelus, and is mourning a helpful process? You know, if you're upset, if you let your whole life be taken over from it, is that healthy? Is that not healthy? But is holding it inside healthy or unhealthy?
A lot of these things with the mourning are also, like, when it says maybe, like, you shouldn't mourn excessively. I mean, there's a public expression of mourning.
Right.
It's a form of communication.
Right.
Almost to the other people. Right. So when he says maybe you shouldn't mourn excessively, is it, you know, you shouldn't wear black for 60 days,
right, like,
but you can still feel pain and suffering.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's not describing every feeling you're allowed to say. But let's say after 7 days, a person says, no, I'm still sad. I'm going to keep sitting on this low chair. I'm going to still not change my clothes. Right. We don't say that. We say, get up. Right. We say, get up, change your clothes, go for a walk outside, re-enter society. And then we give you the 30 days, we give you the year. Obviously, a person can still feel a certain, but we're trying to, you know, invite her, get back into society. All right, let's finish the daf. We can discuss it after. Bachu, bachu, laholach. Right? The pasuk there continues, we read at the end, right? Cry intensely for one who leaves. Almost more permission is given at the end of the pasuk than at the beginning. And Amar Rav Yehuda, laholach b'lo banim. Right? This refers to a person who unfortunately died without having children. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, lo azalibe avla el laman de azil bilobane. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would not visit a mourning house in general. He was too busy learning Torah. He was too busy with his communal responsibilities. Except if someone died without having any sons, he would then, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would make it his business to go to that shiva. Dichtiv bachu vachu laholech ki lo yeshuv od v'ra es eretz moledeto. Right, that you should cry intensely when one leaves, right, because he will not return again, and he will not see the Eretz Moledeto, will not see the land of his birthplace. What does that mean? It's interpreted, Rav Huna Amar, Zesh Avra Veira Vishanaba. Now he says it's about a person who committed a sin, and repeatedly committed that sin. Then he never did tshuva before he died. Rav Huna Latame, right, Rav Huna followed this up, the Amar Rav Huna, Kevan she'avar adam avera v'shanaba, a person who committed a sin and keeps repeating that sin, hutralo, right? It becomes almost permitted to him, right? If you do a sin so many times, the first time you feel bad. Second time, okay. By the time you did it 3, 4, 5, 500 times, you don't even think about it. You don't think that you're doing an avera. It's just that's who you are. That's what you do. And the Gemara says, hutralo? Selka daitcha? Can you really say that he mamish thinks it's mutter? No. Ella, Emana says, look at her. It's like it's permissible. Right? He knows that really it says in Shulchan Aruch that he's not supposed to do this, but he's done it so many times, it's as if it's permissible, he doesn't even bother thinking twice. Amar Rabbi Levi, Aval Shlosha Yamim Rishonim, Yira Es Atzmo, Ki Ilacherav Menuchas Lo, Bein Shte Yirichosav. This refers to different stages of mourning. We said 3 days, 7 days, 30 days. It's interesting also, a theological statement here, that for the first 3 days, when after a loved one dies, you should view it if there's a sword lying between your thighs. You should view it yourself as if you're in mortal danger to a certain extent. That the Malach HaMavis, or this bad omen, has come upon your family, and you should really think about your own deeds. Shloshav ad Shiva, from 3 to 7 days, Kilu Menachas Lo Keneged BeKeren Zavis, you know, as if the sword is lying in front of him in a corner. It's not as close to you, it's moving farther away. The danger is subsiding, but it's still there. Mikan ve'elach ki'ilu overes keneged b'shuk, as though the sword is passing in front of him in the street, meaning, like, you know, the danger is always out there, and we need to protect ourselves by doing proper things, by doing tshuva, but it's not as close, it's not on your neck, it's not sitting on your body.
Thank you.